I am the Ascended Master Moore. And although this music you have played has been revealed as being the keynote of me as an Ascended Master, I am, of course, more than any piece of music. You will see that this music is revered around the world by many different people who have never heard of Ascended Masters, and although they may be uplifted by listening to the music, it does not mean that they can tune in to my being, to my presence, just by listening to a piece of music, for tuning in to an Ascended Master is not a mechanical act, a mechanical process. I was playing a little trick on this messenger before the dictation, because he went through his normal routine of taking a dictation where he tunes in to the master and says, Master Moore, you are the doer, I can of my own self do nothing. And this is, of course, to get himself in a neutral state of mind where he is not taking a dictation, he is allowing it to flow through him without affecting it with any outer intention. But the trick I was playing on him was that I gave him the thought that this was not enough to tune in to my presence. And he realized immediately that it was because he needed to become more than a human being who can do nothing of itself. And this is a key to all of you who want to tune into my presence. It is also a key to why I did this for some radical, for some false thing of changing my name. I want you to know that I am more than any image that has been given through any messenger, and that has more than any image that has been built by any group of students. So if you want to tune in to me, you need to realize that you are more than a human being, and it is through acknowledging that you are more that you can tune in to Master Moore. Is this not logical? And so, having gotten this out of the way, I want to move on to the topic at hand. What can we do about the nation of Ukraine? Well, I want to let you know that you have already done much. By coming together at this conference, by giving the invocations you have given, I want you to realize that when you give an invocation like this Miracle Forgiveness Rosary, by being so many of you together in one place, you are sending an impulse into the collective consciousness of such power that this has never happened before in this nation. And naturally, there is always free will. And people may choose to ignore the opportunity they have been given. But they did not have free will before they received this impulse of what you have projected out. And the essential message in this invocation is this: by not forgiving, you are harming yourself. This is the message that has now been projected into the collective consciousness of Ukraine, of all people who live here, also in the nation of Belarus and in the nation of Russia, because so many of you from Russia have come here. And so there is now a very powerful impulse that has been projected into the collective consciousness, and this has given all people, even though most of them are not aware of it, but it has given them an opportunity to rethink how they look at forgiveness. And most people, of course, look at forgiveness that If I am someone has harmed me, if I am to forgive them, they have to live up to certain conditions. They have to either regret what they have done, they have to change, or they have to be punished for a certain period of time. And when they have been punished enough, then I can forgive them. What are you doing? You are holding yourself in that state of consciousness. And as long as you think these other people need to suffer, you yourself will be suffering. Non-forgiveness is a state of mind, that could be called hell. What is hell? Well, regardless of the images projected out there by the Christian religion, it is more than anything a state of mind. What is it that blocks progress in any nation? It is a state of mind. What was the Soviet Union? First of all, a state of mind. What have we said many, many times through this messenger? Consciousness comes before the physical manifestation. Any condition you look at in the material universe, there is a state of consciousness that precipitated that condition. Now, you may do certain things in the physical realm to change conditions. I am in no way denying that this can be done. But the question is, how can you actually come to the point where you can take certain actions? You may say that there are nations in the world who have created a more peaceful society where there is more affluence and freedom. And they did this by taking certain physical actions. But what enabled them to take those physical actions? It was that there was first a shift in consciousness. That is the central message that we have given to our students now for almost a century. But I dare say that the majority of those students who have heard this message have not truly internalized it. They have not fully accepted it. And therefore, they are still projecting out that something out there needs to change. That is why you see students who are still sitting there using the decrees given in previous dispensations, and they are thinking they are decreeing to change world conditions, but they are only projecting out that it is those other people who need to change. They are not willing to themselves be the forerunners by changing their own state of consciousness. So what we have called you, who are open to this dispensation, to step up to is the realization that you can have a tremendous impact on your nation and the world by changing your own state of consciousness. And that only by changing your own state of consciousness will you have the full impact that Ascended Master students can have. There is simply no way to have maximum impact by only decreeing for other people to change while not being willing to change yourself. You can have an impact. I am not saying that these students of previous dispensations are not having or have not had a positive impact on the world. They have. But it has not been the full potential of what can be achieved when we have a group of students, a student body, who is willing to look at themselves, work on themselves, set themselves free. Because When you are free in yourself of a certain state of consciousness, when you call for other people to be set free from that state of consciousness, or for the judgment of those who will not be set free, your calls have an almost infinitely greater impact than when you have not freed yourself from the consciousness. We are talking magnitudes greater impact. So those of you who have truly internalized the need to forgive, the power of forgiveness, of setting yourself free and setting other people free, your invocation that you have just given has had an almost infinitely greater impact than if you had given it without having internalized it yourselves. And that is why it is so extremely powerful when you use these latest books and invocations of resolving the primal self and all of the separate selves, because it sets you free so that, in a sense, we could say that you are no longer a human being making the calls for the world to change. You are more than a human being because you recognize that you are more. And therefore, you are not just making a call. You are an open door for the flow of the Spirit through you, and that has a much greater impact. Now then, back to the situation in Ukraine. What the people of Ukraine have said by electing this new president and this new parliament is that we have had enough of the old patterns, the old politics as usual. We want something new. We want more. And so the question is, how can they have more? Only by realizing that they are more. How can you truly forgive? By realizing that you are more than the self that was hurt and that feels the desire to punish those that hurt you. You can only forgive by leaving things behind, not just the outer situation, not just the other people, but what are you really leaving behind? You are leaving behind the self that was hurt. What gives people a desire for revenge? It is that they have a self that was created when they were hurt by other people. They reacted to that situation. Perfectly natural and understandable that people at a certain level of consciousness react to being harmed by building a self that is hurt. But the fact of the matter is, and some would call it a brutal fact of life, but it is simply a fact of life, is that this self is projecting that there is a problem that has to be solved. These people did something wrong. They need to be punished. They need to be made to suffer. They need to be made to see that what they did was wrong. But this problem can never be solved. It can never be solved enough. If you doubt my words, go to the Middle East. Look at the situation between the Israelis and the Palestinians and the Arabs. Can you ever punish the other side enough so that the one side will feel now they have been punished enough, now we can forgive them? Well, maybe you can, my beloved, but it hasn't happened in the last 5,000 years, has it? And is that not some indication of the impossibility of the task? So the fact is that as all selves, this self is projecting that you have to solve a problem by making these other people change or by punishing them, and then you can forgive. And then you can be free of the self. But as we have told you, even if you could solve the problem, you would not be free of the self. Because the self would just find some other condition that needed to be fulfilled so that it can stay alive. So you need to come to that realization. And I am naturally speaking into the collective consciousness because I know you understand this, but you need to come to this realization. Do I want to be free? Then I need to move on. And so, to be perfectly direct, as we have determined to be here, what do the Ukrainian people want? It's perfectly clear, and there can be no doubt about it, that much suffering has been done to the Ukrainian people by Russia, by communist Russia, Soviet Russia, Stalinist Russia. The Holodomor is a big wound in the collective consciousness. I am in no way trying to belittle this. But there is an attitude in the collective consciousness of Ukraine, most former Soviet republics, most Warsaw countries, that the Russians should either be punished for what they did or at least be made to see what they did and see that it was wrong, as the Germans have seen that the Holocaust and the Nazi regime was wrong. There are many people who feel that the Russian people have not seen that the Soviet Union was an aggressive force that precipitated immense suffering on people outside of Russia, as it, of course, precipitated immense suffering on people inside of Russia. But many people feel that the Russians have not seen this, they have not acknowledged this, they have not determined that this should never happen again. And of course, when you talk about the largest part of the Russian population, it's perfectly correct. There are, of course, many Russians, the creative people in Russia, the many spiritual people who have embodied in Russia in order to bring Russia forward, who have seen it, who have acknowledged it. But it has never been acknowledged officially by the Russian government. And there has never been a willingness to ask for forgiveness, as, for example, you saw not very long ago, there was a celebration or a memorial in Poland to commemorate the German attack in 1939, and the German government sent a representative who openly asked for forgiveness, as they have done many times before. This has never been done by any Russian government. And there are many people who feel that this should be done before we can truly forgive the Russians. But I now speak into the collective consciousness of Ukraine. And I say, what do you want? Do you want to be continue to be tied to the Russian people? Or do you want to be free to be yourselves, to create your own nation on your own terms? And if you want the first, then just continue to not forgive the Russians. But if you want to be free to be your own nation, then this can only happen if you forgive the Russians unconditionally, without waiting for any change in them. Because when you are waiting for other people to change, you are keeping yourself trapped in a certain state of mind that prevents your progress. You must let go. It is the same that you have now with the civil war in eastern Ukraine. You cannot right the wrongs. You cannot change the past. You can only determine how can we find a way to move on. And as Mother Mary said, there must be dialogue. And as the president has already demonstrated, he is willing to at least attempt to have such a dialogue. And so this needs to happen in the collective consciousness that people are saying, let the past be the past, and let us look at what kind of a future we can create for this nation. Can we move forward together, or can we find a peaceful way to move forward separately? Other nations have done this. Other nations have divided and moved forward in a more or less peaceful manner. The same can happen here. I'm not saying it must, but I am saying that it is certainly far better to split Ukraine into two nations than to continue a civil war that claims more and more lives, I might say, without having any chance of achieving anything constructive. There is a concept from the Bible that you can find in the Old Testament that there had been warring for a long time, and people came to a point where they had just had enough of it. And even though there was no decisive victory and nothing had really been achieved, the people just decided to beat their swords into plowshares and move on, to start building something up instead of destroying and tearing down. This is, as we read it from the Ascended State, what the Ukrainian people, a majority of them, have decided that they want. But it is one thing to decide that you want the outer change to manifest. It is another to decide that you are willing to change your own state of mind so that the outer condition that you want can be manifest. You want peace. You want progress. Why do you not have peace and progress? Because there is a state of mind that blocks it. There is a state of mind that precipitated the current conditions. And unless you are willing to change your state of mind, how can the outer conditions change? It cannot happen. So this is what you have made the calls for at this conference. This is what those of you who feel this is your responsibility can continue to make the calls on, so that you can support from a spiritual level the people in Ukraine and their forward movement to where they shift their consciousness. That critical mass of people will shift their consciousness and decide whatever happened in the past. We see that what we actually want is a better future. A future that is more than the past. And we want that future more than we want to hold on to the past. This is the simple choice to be made. Naturally, my beloved, those of you who are students in Russia can make the calls that the Russian people will be willing also to move on, also to let go of the past, even be willing to acknowledge that the Soviet Union did create immense human suffering both inside and outside of Russia, and be willing to ask for forgiveness and forgive themselves for this as well. Because you may say that there is a big scar, a big wound in the collective consciousness of Ukraine because of what was done by Stalinist Russia. But do you not think that there is also a scar in the collective consciousness of Russia because of what happened during the Soviet Union? You see, my beloved, whenever there is conflict between human beings, groups of human beings, there is often a group that feels that they were the victims. They were the ones who were the victims of the aggressors. And many people feel that the Russian people were the aggressors through the Soviet Union. Now, so those who feel like the victims tend to think, we have been hurt, but they have not been hurt. They are the aggressors. But you need to recognize here that the Russian people were not the aggressors. There was a class of people in Russia who were the aggressors, but not the general population. What have we said? The Soviet Union claimed to be the classless society, but it was divided into two distinct classes. Those who were suppressed by the communist regime and those who were carrying out that suppression. It is simply not so that all Russian people were able or willing to be the aggressors, to be those who suppressed others. They could not do so. But there was a group of people in Russia who were willing, for various reasons, to suppress others, to arrest their own countrymen, sometimes even family members, to report their family members, even in extreme cases, report their own parents to the authorities for not having the right communist beliefs. And so you need to make a distinction here where you do not see all Russians as being the aggressors, as being the ones who suppressed your nation. You need to realize here that the vast majority of the population in Russia or in any nation are people like yourselves. They are people who want what? To live a good personal life according to their own decisions without being forced by any external force. This is what most people want. They are not aggressive. They want the good life. And so with this, you can begin to forgive the population that you feel of the country that you feel has hurt you. And then you can identify that there was a class of aggressors in Russia, and those you don't need to forgive as such, at least you can call forth the judgment of them, the dark forces, the consciousness behind them. And when you have done that, you can say, well, now I have done what I need to do, now I can let go. And that, of course, is another word for forgiving, because what do you do when you forgive? You let it go. You say, enough is enough. I leave it behind. And by letting go, you are setting yourself free. The Ukrainian people, as we have said, have a right to be their own people, to not be forced by Russia, by the West, any external force. You have a right to be your own people in your own nation. But in order to be your own people, you have to forgive. And how can you forgive? Well, here's one additional thought. The question that needs to be asked is, why were you suppressed by the Soviet Union? It was partly, not saying fully, but partly because you were not willing to take responsibility for yourselves. You were not willing to decide what kind of people are we, what kind of nation do we want to live in, and how do we have to change ourselves in order to manifest that kind of a nation. This is the same problem that most Russian people have had throughout history, are not wanting to decide this, therefore attracting one dictatorial ruler after another. And so what you can do in Ukraine, and what is very close to happening in Ukraine, is you can have that shift where you dare to take responsibility for being who you are and manifesting a better nation. I am not saying this because I am blaming anyone. I am saying it because I see that there has been that pressure building in the collective consciousness, and that this determination is very close to breaking through, where a critical mass of people in Ukraine can suddenly see this. As we have said so many times, it is not that there is some force, but people are set free from the blindness. Like the Bible says, the scales fell from their eyes, and they suddenly see, and now it is obvious to them. You don't have to argue about it. You don't have to convince them. You don't have to convert them, because from within they see this is obvious. And that is the change that is very close to happening, and that you who are our students can call forth, so that it can truly break through to the physical octave. You can give a huge impetus, as you have already started, with this conference, but more needs to be done over a period of time. And so these are some very important things to make calls for. But I want to talk about one more thing here, and that is the topic of corruption. Corruption could be said to be the one thing on the outer that is preventing the progress of Ukraine, that is preventing a major shift in the Ukrainian nation. It is certainly preventing economic growth, and that the majority of the population will have a raised standard of living instead of just a few rich people. And so, again, yes, of course, there is an outer condition that is taking place. But what is the consciousness behind it? There is always a consciousness behind it. So, we talked about the perfect storm and the fall of the Soviet Union sort of was the condition for the perfect storm in terms of creating this corruption, both in Russia, in Belarus, in Ukraine, in many former Soviet republics and Warsaw countries. And it is because there was a condition that was created in the Soviet Union, and it has several aspects. One aspect is the majority of the population were beaten down to the point where they simply wanted to survive, and they wanted to have as secure and as comfortable of a daily life as they could. It wasn't a very comfortable life, but at least it wasn't unbearable. So they were willing to submit to this class, this ruling class that you had in the Soviet Union. And I am deliberately using the words class to counteract this lie of the classless society. It is a complete lie that communism freed the people from the class struggle. It just created a different kind of class struggle. One elite, the bourgeois elite, was replaced by another one, the party elite, and the apparatus behind them. And so it was a class structure with one class totally submitting or subverting and beating down the other class. So this was one condition. But what was really behind this was, as we have said now, most people just want a good life for themselves. Now, there are two types of people here, and I'm not saying classes. I'm saying two reactions here. There are people who will settle for something, and they will say, what we have is good enough, and I don't want to risk losing what I have by taking a risk. These are the kind of people that Marx called the working class. They were the workers, and what Marxism is designed to do is to take advantage of these people's unwillingness to take an initiative, because those are the kind of people who can be controlled by the state if you offer them a secure job where they have the standard of living that they think is the norm in their society. They will settle for that. They will say, that's good enough. Let's just be comfortable within the parameters set by our nation. Then you have another class of people who want more. They are willing to take a risk, to take an initiative, to try something new. They are the ones who might start their own business, or who might take a job, they might get an education, or even if they take a job, they are constantly seeking to improve their skills so they can perhaps rise to a higher position. And these are the kind of people that are the backbone of growth in any society. They are actually what in most societies form the middle class that Marx identified as the enemy of the workers. They are not the enemy of the workers. They are the ones who can pull the economy of an entire society up so that the workers get better conditions and better salary for doing the same job. The workers don't have to take a risk, they don't have to take initiative, but as the economy is raised to a higher level, it will naturally spill over and they will get better salaries, better vacation, better working conditions, as you see in most of the modern democracies. When the affluence is raised, everybody benefits to varying degrees, but everybody benefits. And so what drives growth in any society is this class of people, this group of people who are willing to try something. They want more. And what these people know, what they know within, is that there's a natural law. It was the law that Jesus described when he talked about the three servants who received different numbers of talents by their master. The master goes away, comes back, and now says, show me what you've done with the talents I gave you. And the two had multiplied them, and one had buried them in the ground. And it was the two that had multiplied the talents that brought society forward. And they were rewarded by getting more than they had, because this is the natural law. As you give of yourself to improve conditions in your society, you will receive more in return. This is a natural law. We could call it a spiritual law, but it is really a perfectly neutral law. It has nothing to do with any particular religion. It's a function of the universe being a mirror. What you send out comes back to you multiplied. And so these people know that this is how the universe actually works. But what did the Soviet Union do? It actually destroyed the natural flow. It destroyed the return current from the universe. The state inserted itself between the people and the cosmic mirror and interrupted the return current. There were people in the Soviet Union who were the model workers who did more than they needed to do. But who reaped the return current? Well, the state did. And who was the state? Well, the ruling class in society. They were the ones who were reaping the return of the people's labor, of those who wanted to take initiative. There were many workers in the Soviet Union who went to work every day and did the minimum required, but they were not multiplying the talent, so they weren't producing any return current. They were just keeping the same level. But there were many who were willing to do more, but they were never rewarded. The state was rewarded, and that actually helped the Soviet Union survive longer than it would have done if everybody had just worked and done the minimum. And so you see here that the return current had been interrupted. And this is what set the stage for the fact that when the Soviet Union collapsed, in all of the former Soviet republics and in all of the Warsaw countries, you saw, it was already there to some degree, but you saw an explosion of this after the collapse of the Soviet Union, an explosive increase in corruption. Why? Because now there was more freedom in society, so that the people who were willing to take an initiative had the freedom to take that initiative. But you still had the ruling class who thought they were entitled to reap the reward, and that is how corruption was started. That is the mindset behind corruption, where there is a class of people who feel, well, I'm entitled to use my position in the government to enrich myself. What on earth is the logic that says that when you are a servant of the people, you have a right to use that position to extort money from the people that you are meant to serve? There are many, many people in the modern democracies who are in positions of power in the government and who could not even dream of using their position to enrich themselves. But you saw in all of these former communist countries how there was this class of people who felt they were entitled to do this. And you saw that there was a group of people who were so beaten down that they couldn't even object to it. They can complain about it, maybe, but they could not really muster the determination to stand up and say, this is not the kind of country we would want to live in. And so this is what you see. But you also see that many nations, many of the former Warsaw countries, and many, at least some of the Soviet republics, have freed themselves from this and have reduced corruption to a level that is more in line with what you see in the more affluent nations. And so you see here that it is possible to make that switch, and it is also possible for Ukraine, but it will require some very determined people who will stand up, speak out, and demand an end to this corruption. Now, these people have already taken steps by electing a president and a majority of parliament that are not part of the political elite. It doesn't mean that all of them are angels. Some of them are still corrupt. But at least some of them do not have that mindset. But it will still require a determination from the people. It is not enough for a problem like this to just elect a new president and a new parliament and then sit back and wait for them to do their job. Because corruption is a problem that is found at all levels of society. And there is only so much that the government can do about it. Because what needs to happen is there needs to be a change in the attitude of the people, so that those who are on the receiving end of corruption will simply refuse to take part of it. They will refuse to pay up. And this will gradually make those who are in that class of the corrupt people realize we just can't get away with it anymore. Now, you also need to have a very dramatic change that will take some time, where you decrease the incentive to be corrupt, because public employees are actually paid a salary that they can survive on and raise a family on. And so it is a multifaceted process. But other nations have done it. Ukraine is in a position to do it, to make that leap and seriously reduce corruption. And that is why, again, your calls can have a major impact on tipping the nation over, tipping that critical mass of people over where they say, enough, we do not want to live in a nation with this level of corruption. We will not take it anymore. And as we have said, when a dictator feels that a critical mass of people have shifted their determination, the dictator must give way, and it is the same with this class of corrupt people. The psychology of those who are demanding payments or other things from people is that they feel they can get away with it. They can gain more through corruption than they can lose from it. But that is not a very big change to tip this so that they suddenly become afraid that they could lose. And these people, you must recognize their psychology. What are they doing when they are doing this corruption? They are trying to gain without doing more. They are not multiplying the talents. They are trying to get from other people who are multiplying the talents without them having to do anything extra. So their mindset is one where easy gain. But you cannot have a mindset of easy gain without having the opposite polarity of loss, sudden loss. And now a person might be in this, oh, I'm gaining from this corruption. I'm getting rich. I can buy this big car. I can buy this big house. But it is a very small switch that he realizes, but I could lose it all. What if they come after me? What if I get in prison? What if it doesn't go anymore? And then suddenly people can shift and say, I better stop this before something bad happens to me. These people are selfish, self-centered, and it doesn't take much to shift from thinking you can enrich yourself to thinking you could lose. And once that shift happens, it will spread almost like rings in the water, like a wildfire, through this class of corrupt people. And it is a matter of the determination of the people has to be there first. And then the government can ride that wave of determination of the people and carry through and actually enforce the laws that have already been enacted and that will be enacted. But it doesn't do any good to create a law if the people aren't behind it, if there isn't that shift in awareness. And so, my beloved, this is what I wanted to give you, perhaps a little more than I intended to give you when I started. But nevertheless, I trust that you will be willing to take this, multiply it in your own consciousness, and make the calls so that your nation truly can shift and start a new path where you get over that resistance that is there right now, that has been there. This almost like walking in this dense mud. Every step you take forward requires tremendous action, and there is always something pulling you back. But Ukraine is close to breaking free of that and building a upward momentum that becomes self-reinforcing. And in a matter of a few years, this nation can change beyond what most people can even imagine right now. I hope that you who are students will dare to imagine and dare to make the calls and dare to accept that it is possible for Ukraine to be more, much more.